I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Millions of workers in this country, especially low-wage workers, do not get paid sick days or even unpaid sick days through their employers. Public health officials are saying that if you are sick, you must stay home in order to slow the spread of the coronavirus that is now a global pandemic. Back in 2015, then-Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter signed a paid sick leave policy for local businesses of 10 employees or more. Our guest Juliana Reyes, labor reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News, wrote a recent story that many workers in the city don't know they are entitled to these benefits. And she joins us on Radio Times to fix that problem. Juliana, nice to have you with us back on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
This is a law, essentially. It's been on the books for 5 years. Why don't people know about it?
Well, so there was a lot of action and excitement when the bill got passed, but this is what often happens with worker protection laws, that there's a bunch of excitement and then things sort of fall off when it comes to enforcement and education.
What does the policy include? What does it say?
Right. So the bottom line is that if you work in Philadelphia for a company with 10 or more employees, you get to accrue sick time. And so you have to work at least 40 hours a year to start accruing sick time. So you can be a part-time employee and you can get up to 6 paid sick days a year. And if you work for a company with less than 10 employees, you can get unpaid sick time.
And you can get unpaid sick time. Do we know how many people in the city this applies to?
So it applies to at least, there's about 130,000 retail and fast food workers. So those are, I'm talking about like low-wage retail and fast food workers. But it also applies to way more than that, because we were talking white-collar workers, unionized workers, and those are people that already usually have paid sick leave like built into their like work policy.
People that might work for a large company or for the government, for instance.
Right, and it's like those kinds of people, like I guess, you know, of a certain class, like we take it for granted that we have paid sick days, but there are a lot of workers that don't feel like they can, they don't know that they have these paid sick days or don't know that they can take time off if they're sick, and they feel, sometimes people feel pressured to come in because they think that their boss is going to like change their schedule or like give them less hours if they call in sick.
Are we mostly then talking about low wage workers?
Yeah, so I wrote this primer on paid sick leave law in Philadelphia, and it was geared toward low-wage workers, the folks that don't seem to know about these laws and like fear at even asking about them because of retaliation from their manager, and that is also against the law. So if your supervisor is retaliating against you in any way, if you ask about this, like that is a law, that is a violation of the Philly law.
And if someone asks and their supervisor threatens them with their job, what can they do about that? Who do they go to?
Yeah, so they can go to the city. The mayor's Office of Labor enforces this law and they can file a complaint with the city. The main issue with that is that it takes some time. It's a small office that's been growing over the years, in large part due to advocates and organizers fighting for more resources to that office. But they say they'll get back to you within 15 days, and then they do an investigation, and that takes even longer. So if you win your case, you could get back pay and like other remedies, but it could take a month. It could take more than a month.
And we're talking about people that are probably just treading water, and the thought of being out of work for any amount of time is going to be pretty troublesome to them. Has this ever happened? Do we know in the last 5 years whether anyone has lost their job as a result of asking their employer about these benefits?
I don't know specific cases about people losing their job, but anecdotally, you hear people talk about that a lot, and I think a big thing you hear people talking about is if you work in retail or fast food, that if you ask for like paid sick time, then they'll start just sort of cutting you from the schedule because they'll think of you as like unreliable. Like they only want to go to you if they know that you'll always be able to work.
Does this law require that employers be proactive about these benefits? For instance, that they tell their employees or have things like posters in the workplace so the people who work there know what they're at least entitled to?
Yeah, it does. So it is the employer's responsibility to let their workers know about this law. They're supposed to have a poster in the workplace. And they're supposed to be like recording how much each employee works and how much sick time each employee has accrued. And it's, I guess, yeah, the city has said that sometimes businesses just don't know about this law. So they're really like fighting for compliance and they're fighting to like educate employers about this law.
How are they doing that? I mean, how is this law getting enforced from that level, from the top down?
Yeah, so the city does workshops with employers, and there's an increasing number of worker protection laws that employers are like have to follow in Philadelphia. And so yeah, the city has been holding these sessions to teach employers about these laws.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Juliana Reyes. She's a labor reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. The Philadelphia Daily News had a story this week about how many workers in the city of Philadelphia don't know that they are entitled to some benefits related to sick days. And as we all know, with the coronavirus pandemic, sick days are very important in terms of trying to stem the spread of the coronavirus. You can join our conversation. Any questions or comments, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Julian, I'm thinking, I mean, there are individuals, stores, let's say, or even restaurants that are owned by local people, and they're not part of a chain. This applies to them, too, if they have more than or 10 employees or more, correct?
Yeah, correct. And can I tell you about, there's two other sort of main misconceptions about the law. So one is that your supervisor cannot force you to find coverage for your shift. So, you know, if you're like, hey, I'm sick, they can't say, well, in order to take your sick day, you need to find someone to cover your shift. That's against the law.
Okay.
And that happens a lot in the restaurant industry. That happens a lot in like low wage service work jobs. And also, you can also take your sick time to take care of your child if they're sick, or like a parent who's sick.
So you can use your sick days to help someone in your family if you yourself are not sick.
Right. And actually, so one big thing now with the coronavirus is that the way it's written in the law, it does not say that you can take paid sick time for, like, in the event of a public health emergency. Yeah. So, you know, if the schools are closed and you have to stay home with your child, even though your child is not sick, like, the way it's written in the law now, it does not say that that would be covered. Yeah. But City Council is talking about that right now and how to change that.
Does this, I'm thinking again who this all applies to. So it's employers of 10 employees or more. How about retail chains or fast food chains? What are their policies related to sick leave? And also, does this then law apply to them? And are they forcing these companies to give their workers these benefits?
Yeah, this law definitely applies to retail chains and fast food chains. So even if these workplaces don't have more than 10 employees, like in a single location, if they have that number anywhere, then it applies to them. There's a group called One Pennsylvania, and they organize retail and fast food workers, and they were big in fighting for another worker protection law called the Fair Work Week Law. And that mandates consistent schedules for retail and fast food workers. And so what I heard from those organizers was that many of the workers they talked to at different retail and fast food chains had no idea that they were accruing this time. And it's like, it's so crazy because, you know, advocates fought for this law. There was a group called Pathways Pennsylvania that really fought for the paid sick leave law. And they fought for 7 years for this law. And it finally passed in 2015. But yeah, it's still sort of like folks just don't know about it.
Think about gig workers. I mean, people that drive for, let's say, Uber. Does it apply to them?
It does not. And so it only applies to employees and people use that word casually, but it really does have like a legal definition. So if you're an employee, you are covered by this law. But if you're an independent contractor, like an Uber driver or like a caviar courier or anyone who is like on 1099, mm-hmm. then you are not covered by this law.
You wrote about Pittsburgh as having a similar law, as I understand from your reporting. Are there other cities in Pennsylvania that have done something similar to what Philadelphia did?
No, I think actually Pittsburgh and Philadelphia are the only ones in Pennsylvania. There's about 33 laws across the country, like city and state laws, that give paid sick leave to workers, but there's no federal law. But there's now, with the coronavirus, there's been a push to, like, Democratic lawmakers have introduced a federal paid sick leave law.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't know what the chances of that are happening.
In fact, Nancy Pelosi says there's going to be a vote today on a package of benefits, so we will see where that goes. How about the Pennsylvania legislature? Is there legislation that's making its way through the legislature, or what's the status there?
Yeah, I'm not sure if there is legislation around paid sick days, but the Pennsylvania legislature does not have a great track record of passing worker protection laws, and that's why Philadelphia has really taken the lead on that, because they, like, lawmakers and organizers, people here have realized that things are not moving on the federal level and things are not moving on the state level. In fact, actually, in Harrisburg, there's a very consistent effort to strip Philadelphia of its rights to make these kinds of laws. They call it preemption. And it was similar in Pittsburgh, where basically Pittsburgh's paid sick leave law was tied up in court for a long time because there was this argument over whether Pittsburgh could make a law like this for its citizens.
Julian, we're also out of time here, but does that mean that the Philadelphia law that's been in effect for 5 years, is that potentially on the chopping block, or is it firmly here?
No, right now it's safe and good. These efforts in Harrisburg have not been successful to block Philly from passing worker protection laws.
Well, Juliana Reyes, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And she's labor reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News. And we'll be talking more after this very short break. We'll be talking about the novel coronavirus and the workplace. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscoena, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. The novel coronavirus pandemic has forced shutdowns across the country, with employers telling their employees to work from home or take some time off. Many schools are closing, which means working parents have to figure out what to do with their children. And for many, that means staying home, too. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the House would vote on a package of measures today that would include paid sick leave, extended unemployment insurance, free coverage for coronavirus testing, and additional food assistance. It's not clear what the Senate or the White House will do yet. The virus has exposed serious vulnerabilities and inequalities in the workplace, especially for low-income workers, many of whom do not get sick days or have health insurance. It also poses a challenge to employers about how to rethink and redesign the workplace for remote work policies. Of course, there are many jobs that can't be done from home. We have two guests who have joined us. Elise Gould is senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute. And Elise, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. Also with us, Peter Capelli. He's a professor of management at the Wharton School, director of the Wharton Center for Human Resources. And Peter, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks, Marty.
We do want to make sure that you can join our conversation. There are several ways to do it. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. We want to know what you are doing, how you are doing, as we are all dealing with this virus and the workplace. Let me begin with a kind of a global question, because it looks like we're talking about a public health crisis that is really driving an economic crisis. Elise, can you speak to that?
Yes, absolutely. When we think about who is being affected by this disproportionately, obviously people across the country can be affected, no matter if they're rich or poor. But many of those workers that are low-wage workers, those that work in the service sector, they are much less likely to have access to paid sick days. They can't work remotely like many higher-paid workers can. And because they work with the public, they are much more likely to be exposed. Therefore, they're more likely to carry it. And at the same time, what's happening is that their jobs are more at risk because many people are cutting down on their contact as they are being advised to stay home. And that means they're less likely to travel, to go to restaurants, to do many of the activities in leisure and hospitality. And so that we're going to see a softening in that demand, and that could lead to job loss and absolutely cutting back of hours and economic security for those workers and difficulty for the economy as a whole.
Elise, I want to pick up on all that you said. Peter, let me give you a chance to weigh in on this as well. And it is a challenge to employers, to businesses. They want to hopefully keep their employees safe. They want to stay in business. And yet, of course, we are told we have to take measures to keep us all safe, to protect us all from this virus. Can you speak to that?
Well, I think you're right. It's a real problem for employers because they can go out of business. You know, some of the gatherings we're talking about, like, for example, postponing religious services and things like that, the churches, the temples are unlikely to go out of business, but the companies, particularly the service ones where they can't inventory things, you know, come back later and make up the gap by working faster, you know, they can easily go out of business. We're watching a recession sort of happen in real time exactly because of this, right? One organization shuts down, they cancel their events, then other people cancel theirs. You can see this happening in the airlines already where they're starting to cut back on their employees and asking for voluntary people to take voluntary time off. So, you know, it's rolling across the whole economy.
Elise, let me pick up on what you said, and then we've got a state senator who wants to join our conversation. But speaking specifically about low-wage workers who currently do not have paid sick leave or even sick leave at all. Now, the House is apparently going to vote on a package of measures today that could include something like that. What are you looking for related to that specific issue?
Well, I think it's right. We want to make sure that people who currently don't have access to paid sick days have it. And it's not just the people who don't have it. You also want to make sure that people have enough.
Right.
So some people may have some paid sick leave right now. They might have 3, 4 days, maybe 5 or 6 days. But the CDC is saying stay home for 2 weeks, right? And there are very few people that actually have 2 weeks of leave. So we need to make sure that it covers the people that don't have it now and covers it enough for even the people that do.
In fact, the CDC says it's important to establish, quote unquote, non-punitive policies in order to encourage this healthy behavior. Is that a concern, Elise, that someone that, you know, either uses sick time they don't have or goes beyond the allotted days, that they could lose their job?
Yes, absolutely, they could lose their job. I think that language, non-punitive, as an economist, we would say you need to create the right economic incentives for people to do what it is that the CDC is recommending. And that means that they do not risk losing their job. That means they do not risk losing their pay, which could mean economic security for them. making sure they can still pay their rent and put food on the table. Those are absolute essentials for workers to be able to make that decision to stay home.
Peter, let me toss something to you. I'm looking at an editorial from the New York Times this week. Walmart, the nation's largest private employer, has set a standard for the rest of the private sector by announcing that in addition to its existing paid sick leave policy, it would provide up to 2 weeks of paid vacation for employees who fall ill or are quarantined, and it goes on from there. Does that, but if Walmart does that, do you imagine other companies might follow suit?
I don't, to be honest.
Okay, that's why I asked.
I think partly because it's, you know, depending what your company is, they might not have the deep pockets to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the thing about this from the other side, for just a minute here,
sure.
It is pretty difficult to know if you're an employer what to do about this, right? And some of this is because we have not had really good and consistent advice as to the risks of this. So one of the things that's happening now is it appears that the virus is just exploding. And the reason for that is not because we think it really is exploding. It's because we're getting more tests. And so because we can test, it appears that the number of people with the virus is just growing crazily. That's probably not true. It's people who are already sick. We just didn't know. And now that we're testing, it looks like it's exploding. So, you know, what the real risk is here is not completely clear. And if you look at other countries, if you look at Hong Kong and Singapore, they're not advocating that everybody just stay home. And that seems to be, you know, the way the conversation is going here. If that's really the case, companies are in big, big trouble, right?
Yeah.
Because there's all kinds of companies where they just cannot operate remotely. And I don't think we're really at that point, but we're talking ourselves into that point right now.
And I do want to get to that a little bit later in the hour. Let me get State Senator Steve Santasierra from Bucks County. He's joining us on Radio Times. And Senator, nice to have you with us on the show. Apparently, you're introducing a health emergency bill today. What does that include?
Thank you, Marty. It's good to be with you. Well,
sure.
The focus of my bill is exactly on the topic that you're discussing this morning, and that is to make sure that workers do not lose their jobs or somehow penalized because they can't get into work, either because they're isolated at home, they're quarantined, or they're caring for family members who are sick. Right now, as you've been discussing, there's no such protection under Pennsylvania law. And there are, however, through our research, about 10 other states that have that kind of law on the books already. So the purpose of this one would be to cover, obviously, the crisis we are facing right now with COVID-19, but also any event of similar epidemics in the future.
And do you know from your colleagues, especially your Republican colleagues in the legislature, is there an appetite for this? Is there support for this?
Well, we're going back into session on Monday. We just wrapped up 3 weeks of budget hearings and had a little bit of a week back in the district between that and the next session day. But I know that the governor's office supports it. I know, obviously, our folks in the leadership on the Democratic side do. And I'm hopeful that as we consider a package of bills that we will likely have in front of us next week to address the many issues that the pandemic present, this will be part of that package.
Do you feel like you're in a race against time, though? I mean, time is of essence these days.
Correct. But in some ways, the crunch might help us in this regard, because I think there's a general recognition that there are a number of things, or a number of areas in which current law here in Pennsylvania do not adequately address this type of situation. And so to some degree, if we can have a abbreviated debate on that, it might be a help to get this type of legislation passed.
Oh, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Thanks so much for calling in and telling us about the bill.
Sure. Thank you.
You're welcome. And that's State Senator Steve Santasierra, Democrat of Bucks County, talking about a bill that he's going to introduce about protecting workers in a health emergency. Elise, are we seeing this kind of response to this pandemic?
Yes, I mean, I think it's very important that legislators across the country take this seriously and propose legislation not only to make sure we protect workers, but also to make sure that the economy stays strong. This is going to cause a fair amount of weakness. And I applaud states for doing that. I think that what we really need is federal legislation to step in here to help stimulate the economy, because state budgets may be crunched because of what can happen because of this, because of their Medicaid spending, because of softening on sales tax if people are spending less. And so if the federal government can step in and really support states in their efforts to provide health care, in their efforts to provide paid leave for workers, I think that that would be, that's really called upon here.
Well, we are talking about the novel coronavirus pandemic and the workplace. That's Elise Gould, senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute, joining us by telephone. Peter Capelli also joining us by telephone. He's a professor of management at the Wharton School, director of the Wharton Center for Human Resources. And we want to hear from you, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Elise, let me go back to you quickly, but Peter, I'd like to hear from you as well. There is talk about just sending people cash, kind of like a universal basic income, at least for this moment. Does that make sense to you, Elise?
Yes, absolutely. There's been talk of cash. There's been talk of a payroll tax cut. Definitely, I would go in the direction of cash. The payroll tax cut will get rolled out kind of too little, too late. What we need is the infusion of cash right now so that people can continue to pay their rent, can continue to put food on the tables, can get the health care that they need, and also to stimulate the economy, right? If you are going to have that cash in people's hands, they can spend it, and that can help boost consumer spending at a time when we know that there is going to be increased weakness over the next few weeks and potentially months.
Should that be targeted to people that are specifically going to be hurt by this
virus? I think it could be progressively targeted to make sure that we are getting those people that are much more likely to be living paycheck to paycheck, those people that are much less likely to be able to take that time off, people that are more likely to have their hours cut right now with the service economy as it is.
Peter, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing we could do now is get some clarity as to what we are really supposed to be doing to protect ourselves. Of course, to really protect yourself, you should lock yourself in your house and not leave for a month. But I think that's, you know, that's kind of impossible. One of the things that I was doing is I took a quick look to see what the advice was from the previous epidemics, from SARS before that and MRSA and the swine flu and those things. And interestingly, there was nothing about about social isolation then, and there was nothing about self-quarantining either. The advice was all about, at least in the workplace, trying to keep people from getting sick in the workplace.
Right.
And I'm not so sure that the magnitude of this risk at the moment looks that much greater than what we saw before. And so I think we could really use some clarity as to what we're supposed to do. Here's the reason this is such a problem, is there's something we call medical school syndrome. Medical school syndrome means that medical students, when they're studying diseases, imagine that they've got every disease that they study. The more you hear about the symptoms, the more you can imagine that you've got it. And if we're telling people, look, if you think you're sick, stay home, if that's the criteria, we're going to have lots and lots and lots of people staying home from work, people who are not really sick and are imagining that they're sick. So, and if no way to test people, that's the other big problem. So I think even far bigger issue right now than economic stimulus is to see whether we could get some clarity here, because I think at the moment we are. And maybe this is the right thing to do, but it doesn't seem completely consistent with the facts yet. We are racing toward basically a national shutdown. And is that really appropriate? I don't think we know yet.
I think Anthony Fauci would disagree with you. Based on some of his testimony this week, is that he's really calling for some pretty draconian measures.
Well, do we shut down the workplace? Because if we do that, okay, but boy, are we in big trouble. Because there's lots of companies where you can't work remotely. And if we're telling people that if you think you might be sick, or in some places they're saying if you're afraid of getting sick, don't come to work. And if that's the case, if that's the standard, then a lot of companies are going to go out of business, and the economy is going to ground to a halt in a very quick manner.
Oh, well, let me get a caller who's been very patient. This is Rob from Elfort to join us. And, Rob, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
So I'm a union electrician, and obviously I have to be on the job to, you know, to make my paycheck. My question is, you know, what happens if, you know, for example, in Pennsylvania, if Governor Tom Wolf, if he mandates that, you know, all right, we need to shut down Monroe County with where I live. We need to make sure everyone quarantines or self-quarantines. And, you know, you can't go to work, this, that, and the other thing. How do I go about paying my mortgage? You know, how do I go about paying my bills? And then, you know, even after the dust settles and, you know, I can go back to work, I'm going to be spending months trying to build back up, you know, money to pay my bills on time. You know, but what's going to happen, you know, if I can't pay my mortgage on time? Is the bank going to come after me and try to evict me out of my house? Or,
well, you know? These are all such critical and important questions, Rob. I'm not sure we can answer them completely, but let me give Elise a chance to respond to your concerns.
I think those are concerns that people across the country are having in terms of if they work like you do as an electrician. Maybe you work for yourself, or maybe you work for a small business and you're afraid they're going to shut down and then you're not going to have that money. And I think that's why sending checks to people right now is helpful, to help allay those fears and actually help people make ends meet to be able to pay their rent. I think there could be more done. I know that in some other countries there's talk of people not having to pay their mortgage for a period of time, making sure that people do not get evicted and get closed out of their houses. That is absolutely of utmost importance, to make sure that people have that economic security to be able to make ends meet, or to be able to be given a little bit of a waiver for a period of time so that those things do not happen.
Rob, thanks for calling into Radio Times. You can call as well. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We've got a lot of comments as well. I will read them after this short break. You can send them to radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We will continue our conversation with Elise Gould, senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute, and Peter Capelli, professor of management at the Wharton School, talking about the novel coronavirus and the workplace. I do want to talk about some of the opportunities, challenges of working from home. Do stay with us. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Has the coronavirus changed the way you work? Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Joseph says the only...
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Change for me so far has been a requirement to take our laptop home each day as of this past Friday in case something should quickly change. A comment from Emmanuel. I'm a Philadelphia school district teacher. I haven't noticed any real changes. They added sanitizer pumps to the halls. An email from Susan. I heard an interview on NPR last week with a worker whose job was to clean planes. She was offered no training, no protection, and has no health care from her employer. A Facebook comment from Maggie. I work for a nonprofit movie theater in Philadelphia and have been refused sick days for several years. Yesterday, my boss laid us all off for a month without pay. Now my staff and I are scrambling to find work to make ends meet. And Elise, that's really, you know, that especially that last message just is such a description of this crisis for so many workers.
Yes, absolutely. Those furloughs, being laid off, having your hours cut, those are real consequences of people spending less in the economy, particularly that service sector. We're talking about restaurant workers, people in leisure and hospitality. They're going to have problems as people stay home, and that is very likely going to cause a recession.
And I would think if we're talking about leisure and hospitality jobs, or even food workers, or maybe home health care workers, Elise, we're talking about people who are, if not low-wage workers, are maybe barely above the minimum wage?
That's right. Many of these are going to be low-wage workers, people who work in restaurants. They work for tips. So even if you send people home or you provide them some kind of minimum salary, they're not going to be getting the tips that they might have been getting in their workplace. People who are working in people's homes, people who work with the elderly, those are vital jobs that we need people to be able to go to. We also need them to be able to have paid sick days so that they don't go to work sick. We know that's particularly vital when you work with the elderly population or those with weakened immune systems.
You know, Peter, I think a lot of workplaces, and I would include HYY in this, trying to figure out how do you create policies so that you can have people working from home, or do you have the technology so that people can work from home, that they don't come to work? How difficult is that, do you think? And maybe it just varies from workplace to workplace.
Marty, I looked back a little bit, and in 2009, when swine flu was a big issue, a lot of companies put in place protocols for how to work from home, and so did my own university. I think one of the problems is it's been 10 years, and a lot of people have even forgotten that the protocols are around.
Right.
I think the big thing that we have to do, which is pretty simple, is that right now in most workplaces, we let local managers decide now whether people can work from home or not. And so you see in the same companies, in this part of the company, you can work from home because my manager thinks it's fine. And over here doing the same job, you can't because the manager there thinks people are goofing off when they're home. So one of the things companies can do right now and should be doing is figuring out which are the really essential jobs that can't be done remotely. And for those that could be done remotely, let's figure out what the protocols are and apply them company-wide. It's a pretty simple thing to do. And then for those jobs that have to be done here, what's our replacement plan, right? So if somebody gets sick who's doing this key job, who's the person that can step in to do it? Because, you know, for the companies right now, the big thing is can they keep going? We can talk ourselves into a crisis with self-fulfilling prophecies, but if companies can't get the work done, they're going to shut down even if the demand is there.
Right.
So figuring out who can step in, what the order is for people who maybe have to stretch a little. I've never done this job before, but maybe I could give it a try. It's not crazy to ask me to do this. I don't need a license to do it. We got to figure that out now.
And
I think that's a really great
point.
Yeah,
go ahead, Elise.
I absolutely agree with you there. I think that having company-wide policies, making sure that that managers are doing something consistent across, so it's not that you have one boss who understands and one boss who doesn't, or whatever the case may be. Also, when you limit how many people are actually going into the work, you are actually, in essence, limiting that socialization because there aren't as many people congregated in one place. And so that can solve that problem as well.
Do we sometimes find, if doing that analysis, that managers are not necessary to the, you know, the production of a workplace, Elise?
Oh, well, that's
the managers
other,
are expendable.
That's another radio segment we could be talking about there.
I'm wondering, though, Peter, whether you mentioned goofing off, whether when people work at home, do we know, do they goof off?
Well, I think the evidence is that they don't really, and that it seems to work much better than most people think. But it entirely depends, I think, on the ability to manage performance, to tell people, here's what we need you to do. You know, people goof off at work, too, right? So it's not just that if you go home, it makes it possible. You can pretend you're working in a white-collar office and not get anything done. So, you know, this goes to better performance management, you know, telling people, here's what we have to do, and here's what we want to see done by the end of the week, and here's what it'll look like. You know, I think on the goofing off topic, though, Marty, I think the biggest concern here is this is a kind of litmus test for what kind of relationship you have with your employees, because what you'd really like is that employees would use their best judgment and stay home if they feel sick and come in if they don't, that they would feel some obligation to the organization. But if you've got a workplace where you don't trust your employees, they can really take advantage of you now, right? Because if we're saying, you know, you decide whether you think you're sick, and who's going to know, right? So you could have lots of people, if they really don't want to come to work and they don't really care about the organization they work for very much, they could really abuse you right now, and there's not very much at this point you can do about it if you got a bad relationship with your employees.
I mean, that's a real test for employers. I wonder, though, Elise, I mean, obviously, depending on what happens in the House and what the Senate does and what the president does in terms of at least dealing with some of these policy deficiencies, do you think, you know, being an optimist and sort of a glass half full person myself, that maybe this is the crisis that will get us to address some of the inequalities in our workplaces?
I absolutely understand the tendency to want to think that that there's some sort of silver lining. The problem is that it's highlighting all the inequalities in a way that is hugely detrimental to people, to their health, and obviously people are dying. And I wouldn't want to make light of that, but you're right that absolutely this is an opportunity where we see, okay, this is where we're falling short. This is where it's not working. Let's try to fix this now, and let's keep this from happening in the future. So it is absolutely an opportunity, and action needs to be taken. Otherwise, it will get worse.
Right. I mean, the kind of crisis opportunity thinking. What do you think about that, Peter?
I think one of the big things we learned from this socially is the importance of the community around us, right? So the fact that you've got great health care doesn't protect you very much if the person that who is serving you or the person that you're working with doesn't, and they're sick. You know, this is the nature of epidemics, right? It's a public problem. So I think to that extent, I think you're right. Somebody has to make the case for that, though, right? So there are a lot of things that are true and people don't pay attention unless somebody beats them over the head with it a little bit, and somebody's got to do that.
Let me read a tweet from Kim. This is for you, Peter. It's extremely irresponsible for Professor Capelli to comment on the epidemiology infectiousness of COVID-19 as he just did. He's an HR expert. He should not be undermining public health experts.
Yeah, and I don't think I have. And if somebody could tell me what the public health advice is for employers and whether they should shut down or not, that would be great. I think that's the issue that I'm commenting on. Could we get some consistent explanation here as to what employers should do other than send everybody home? And if that's the advice, well, let's get it, but let's do it fast and get this over with, because I haven't heard that.
I mean, I've heard, I would say, a version of that coming from Fauci and some others in the public health sector who have some experience with some of these epidemics in the past.
Well, that's news to me. I haven't heard anybody say that companies should shut down. And if they have, then boy, we better get that out fast.
Anything you want to comment on that, Elise?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I have to leave the healthcare to the healthcare experts or to the, you know, medical profession and the researchers. And I think absolutely everything should be on a dual track here. We should have all of the greatest minds working on trying to figure out how to solve this, how to make sure we have the best testing, the best treatment, the best vaccines. We should be doing all that at the same time. We should really be monitoring community by community, as Peter says, and this is affecting people differently, and we need to make sure that people are safe, and in some places it hasn't spread as much as it has in other places. What we need to do also, I think that's pretty clear from the data, is that we don't want to overwhelm our healthcare system. So what having the social distance does is it can keep too many people from getting sick at the same time, and so even if eventually a lot of people do wind up getting sick, we don't want to overwhelm the system at one time. And so it seems pretty clear that the message we're receiving right now is to keep a certain amount of social distance so that we can slow down the spreading of this illness, and that can aid our public, our health system in general.
And I think we've seen that curve now. You know, that's a familiar image that I think we're all aware of. Here's an email from Harvey. He says, as a physician, I feel that I have a societal and ethical calling to care for those who are ill. What about the hourly support staff in the office? Should I expect the same commitment from them? That's in a sense, a very philosophical question. Peter, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think this is kind of what I was talking about a little earlier. What sort of obligations do you feel that your employees have to the organization, and what sort of professional obligations do you think that they have? And some of this, I think, goes back to this question, which we are dancing around because we don't know the answer to, is the what is the real risk here? This doesn't seem to be the equivalent of the plague yet, but if it gets much more serious and The question is whether you are putting yourself at risk to help your organization or to help your customers. You know, it's quite a different thing if you are in the healthcare business as opposed to if you are in a restaurant business, for example, in terms of the ethical obligations you've got. But, you know, all this comes back to this question of what is the real risk, and we're getting apparently quite conflicting messages on this, and it would be important to get some clarity. I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all need and want as much clarity as we can possibly get. Here's a comment from Devin, actually referring to the very beginning of the show, but Elise, I'll put it to you. He says, I worked in the restaurant industry in Philadelphia for many years. Somehow no one mentioned the sick leave law. I've seen plenty of sick workers forced to work and managers penalizing workers for calling out sick. We began by talking about a law in Philadelphia that's been on the books for 5 years, basically, if you work for an employer with 10 employees or more, you get access to paid sick time. And the reporter that we had on was saying that many people, apparently this listener as well, in Philadelphia did not know that law existed. And I guess that raises questions about having laws, but then implementing them.
That's right. It's important to have those labor standards, and it's also important to enforce them. You need to inform people of their rights, and you need to make sure that law enforcement can step in if those laws are not being followed, if they're being broken. The problem also happens when managers have a lot of discretion about setting hours. So it could be explicit or implicit that if you call in sick, oh, well, maybe you're not going to get scheduled as many hours the next week because you're not seen as devoted to your employer as those other workers might be, even if it's better for your business for people to not show up when they're sick, like in restaurants, those food service workers, right?
Yeah.
You don't necessarily want them coming to work when they're sick, but if you penalize them, creating the wrong economic incentive, so even if they have those paid sick days, but they're being nudged to not take them, then it's a little bit like they didn't have them in the first place.
And I wonder, at least thinking about restaurants and other retailers, you know, people in communities, in cities, what do you think the rest of us can do to help those kinds of workers who do rely on things like tips and customers and people coming and frequenting their places and having that kind of interaction?
That is a really big question, and I think that is where we need the government to be stepping in and making sure that we can provide a safety net for those workers, not only for the economy, but to make sure that those workers themselves can pay their bills. There are things that can be done. We could expand the unemployment insurance system for people that are on furlough or laid off, those people that have to be quarantined, to make sure that they're protected. But also, it's just those people who may have their hours cut because nobody's showing up and wanting to buy what they're having to sell right now because a lot of people are isolating themselves. And so we need to be able to stimulate the economy in that way by giving people real dollars, by also supporting state governments as well, those that are going to get hit by less sales tax revenue, those that are going to have increased Medicaid spending because of people needing to get that health care. You could do that simply by having the federal government step up and pay their match for Medicaid dollars, and that would be stimulus to states immediately.
Peter, we're almost out of time here, but final thoughts from you in terms of what employers can do.
Well, I think employers are trying to straddle a difficult bridge here between trying to keep themselves in business and trying to do the right thing for everybody else, or at least good employers are. And I think we just need a whole lot more clarity in terms of advice as to what they should be doing. One of the things I learned from this show today is people are all over the place with respect to what they think we ought to be doing. And that's not a question that we can answer. Somebody in the government has to take the lead in this.
Leadership, right? Under
these
kinds of circumstances. Peter Capelli and Elise Gould, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Elise Gould, senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute. Peter Capelli, professor of management at the Wharton School, director of the Wharton Center for Human Resources. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program, including how to download a podcast of the show. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us.